I think that the panel has several reflections on each other and on the questions and comments of the president. So I think we could start. Anyone who would like of you to start? Anu, do you? Minister Rehn.
Just on this with minorities and majorities, across the Finnish Gulf, we of course have a lot of problems in the Baltic states, where in some of the states, the minority is even majority in some towns and in some parts they are struggling, and I think that they are struggling quite well to find the solutions, but it's putting some kind of shadow of their democratic work, and I think that we can be quite helpful, not only with the Åland example, because they are of course independent states and old states, but in this cooperation between majority and minority, even more than we are doing today. I know that you, Madam President, done a lot in your cooperation with the leadership there, but to get some kind of mistrust away, that is not very, very easy. I'm quite often talking with the Baltic leadership and on different levels, and it seems still to be a problem. So it's this with to be a minority. I think you also were very right in this, that we have still a little bit of some kind of little sister complex. Everybody's our big brothers.
Minister Eliasson, do you want to respond to the big brother complex?
No, I think I think the main thing is to realize that the majorities are also tremendously enriched by minorities. Mm. That in fact a society becomes so much more alive and vital if you see the all the colors, as Tarja was saying. Yeah. I don't say that integration in today's globalized world is easy, but I think the long-term aim must be to see that you also realize that you have to have the world inside your own society. When I was foreign minister, I said to my own staff that I want to be a foreign minister who is not representing Sweden in the world. I also want to be a foreign minister representing the world in Sweden. That is equally important, because today domestic and global issues are almost the same. So we have to have a vision with practical steps ahead of us and how we then can live together. That's why, again, the Åland Islands example is so important.
Before handing to Ilse, I just wanted to reflect on the fact that several of the presentations, in fact, are talking about triangular relationships, which I find extremely interesting. And it is part of this discussion that the polarization of relations is in itself creating a problem. So even when you presented Åland, you said the triangular relationship between Sweden or Swedish and Finnish and Åland in between, which is deconstructing this polarization of the parties. And Ilse was on the same line with regard to the situation in the Crimea, with the Tatars playing a little bit the third party triangular relationship. But I wanted to complicate Mrs. Brandskerhi's life by adding one further question. I find it almost an impossibility to define the moment of what is too early and what is too late. Mm-hmm. Yes, because we say, and that is part of the book, that timing is essential, and I think for a good diplomat it is the essence. But if it's too early, then all of our Caucasian friends would say this is aggravating the conflict. Mm. This is enhancing the level of claims, and it is polarizing the society. But then when the conflict really starts on, then it's too late. So how do we really think about this time frame? And are we thinking rightly in this evolution of a conflict about the timing? So I would like Ilse perhaps to start, and then I'm sure you have other questions. And then it is the privilege of the democratic way of thinking on Åland that also the public will, anyone in the public, not only the president, will be able to put questions.
Well, just briefly, I think that's an extremely important and challenging issue on the timing. It also, I think I didn't stress enough that even also for the High Commissioner's mandate, it is explicitly stressed that his intervention should be as early as possible, and this is in line also with Jan Eliasson's argument, of course, with the idea that conflict prevention will be effective only when addressing issues early. But there is also another dimension, which is the structural intervention. It has a long-term perspective. It's not exactly when the intervention is there, but it addresses root causes and structural causes, which does take long-term engagement. And again, coming back to Elisabeth Rinn's arguments of the external interests, it's not clear that the sustainability of external interests are focused on the long-term structural development and stability one. So the timing, I think, it really is key. And I think in some of the developments, of course, that we've seen, certainly in the falling apart of the Soviet Union and the former Yugoslav Republic, the issue was also a window of opportunity, perhaps, that we have a timing that, yes, we have only that time. And to some extent, I think that we have good examples and maybe less good examples when this window was used properly. Just very quickly on the majority-minority one, I am, again, with my work in Latvia, I can't resist in commenting on that as well. I think that that is a key issue in much of the former Soviet Union, not only in the in the Baltic states. And of course, it's an issue that doesn't affect just coming to terms with having become a majority from a minority status, which I agree is in Latvia as well. I would claim that everyone in society feels like a minority. There is no majority, because it's also the coming to terms of a former majority of losing their position as a former majority that in some ways can be more painful, as analysis we have from social psychology shows this, that the loss of a majority position is experienced as more painful than the gaining of a majority position by a minority. And then I think that period of transition of identities in society is a very precarious one, and of course requires a lot of thoughtful a consideration of all these factors in identity information, but also the roles, including the roles in the perception of the power interactions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Just very briefly, I think this is a very important issue when you look at the position of language and the position of the minorities. The Swedish minority ties Finland to the Scandinavian area. And this is the basis for Nordic cooperation. So this is a kind of a lifeline for that kind of thinking, and I think that is very important. Without that, we would not have that same kind of link. Secondly, the issue of minorities, as the president said, if you're once a minority and then you are the majority, this has, I think, taught the Finnish government and the state to take exceptional care of the minorities. We have minorities that don't feel like minorities, you know, they don't feel separated in any way. So I think this is one of the success stories in the Finnish system, that we have done that quite well. Thank you.
Well, I want to dwell just a minute more on the too early, too late issue. I think if the Åland model is going to really play a role in the future, there should be methods of introducing the model early on. Because when we wait too late, you have this bitterness and you only go for a separation, or you are integrated with a great bitterness into the old state. The problem with the getting in early is, of course, I know that from the United Nations Security Council, it is considered interference in internal relations. We are slowly starting to come a bit forward on this issue with the responsibility to protect, the ansvaret att skydda. That every state has responsibility to protect its own population from ethnic cleansing and so forth. It was applied in the Libya case for the first time, six years after it was established, actually during Swedish presidency of the General Assembly. But I think if we can find ways of making clear that, for instance, violations of human rights are not internal affairs. They are, the human rights are, as the lawyers know, a universal right. And in that case, there is a legitimacy to acting early. So I would say if you look at the vibrations in the ground, so to speak, when you see that something is going to go wrong, there has to be a new culture where you more readily and more bravely and courageously go into these situations and start to do something. I say this because I've seen too much. I've been in all these horrible situations after the wars, Iran, Iraq, Darfur, Sudan, Somalia, and I'm just saying I'm tired of just not acting early on when we know that it has to be done. I don't understand why prevention isn't done. And I think the Ola model could be an excellent example in the early stages how things work and that model be presented before the explosions take place.
May I just take a yes. comment on this? Just quickly, this responsibility to protect, it was of course used in the bombing because of Kosovo that was unauthorized. And with Libya, I think that with those words and the responsibility, there must also be quite clear rules. Mm-hmm. What is included in when you, so to say, are protecting. And because we know that much went wrong also with Libya, not at least in the end. And so this is a very, very big mandate, the responsibility to protect. It is important, but I think that within the governments in UN, it must be stronger considered what you are allowed to do.
I think we have an excellent representation of a point that we have been making a little bit in the Peace Institute about the more enthusiastic approach from a Swedish perspective on the responsibility to protect and a much more nuanced, perhaps even cautious approach from a Finnish perspective. I don't think we will have a big discussion on that issue. I would like now to open the possibility for the audience to put questions and add points to what 5 minutes, and then we have to break for the lunch. Any questions? Pertti, Joeniemi, who was earlier in the research board of the Peace Institute and is now in Denmark, working extensively on both regional cooperation, the Arctic, and Åland.